Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about Anna Karenina, part two, chapter 10. A bit of a stalemate between them. Who do you feel worse for between Anna and Alexei, sorry. I feel bad for Alexei, says Lexi 109. He's at least trying to connect with her. Meanwhile, Anna is gaslighting him. I'm trying to see her point of view and be sympathetic to her since she wasn't happy before, but I'm struggling. Marriages take work and communication. She just stares blankly at Alexei whenever he tries. It would bother me less if she admitted she wasn't happy in the marriage and or didn't want to stay married, but the "what are you talking about, silly" responses are driving me nuts. Meanwhile, Vronsky follows her and is obsessed with her. I get that feeling can be great, to feel adored, but it seems so shallow. She reminds me of the people who jump relationship to relationship just for the falling in love part and then get bored when they're past that stage and need to work at it. I feel like Vronsky isn't going to stay with her once he actually has her. But I guess it wouldn't be much of a story if she and Alexei immediately talked through their problems and Vronsky went away. And that comment is finished with a shrugging emoji. Very good points. Very well said. That jumping from relationship to relationship type person, I'm definitely getting that vibe with Vronsky and Anna. I feel worse for Alexei at the moment, says I Am Norwegian. I can't imagine how frustrating it must be to try and be genuine with a wall of baffled amusement deflecting his every attempt at reaching her. Speaking from a lack of experience, I've read that marriages are a lot of hard work. People, especially in the 19th century, rarely just fit together like puzzle pieces. If you have to shave off and add parts to yourself so that you can come together, Point being, neither party has put in the work in the past, which they're really suffering under now. But Alexei is trying. Thermos of Beer says, I have no sympathy for Anna right now. I don't know if that's how Tolstoy wants me to feel, but it's how I feel. Her running around town with another man just because she finds her husband dull is not okay. I also do not care for Vronsky. Sluggy with 3 G's said, I feel bad for both of them right now in different ways. Like others have said, at least Karenin is trying, but he is unable to communicate his real feelings to Anna. As someone not used to dealing with their feelings, he is utterly unable to express what he wants to say to Anna and reverts to usual mocking tone. But it was impossible to say what needed to be said to her using that tone. By this point, Anna seems to have already made her decision, and when Karenin talks to her, she can only see the cold, unloving man that she perceives him to be. Just as Karenin is unable to put himself in her place and understand her feelings, Anna simply cannot relate to what he must be feeling. In the previous chapter, she thinks to herself that he simply doesn't care, and since he continues to speak to her in his sardonic tone, it further cements this belief for her. Her gaslighting seems to be a reflection of this. If he doesn't really care, then she doesn't have to either. Swims to the Mama Fishy says, my heart aches for both Anna and Karenin. Anna, because she was married off at 17 or 18 to a man 20 years older than herself, who is now dazzled 10 years later by superficial society fun and the attentions of a man just a bit younger than herself. Karenin, because of his very organized life, was thrown into chaos, and even though he tries, he retreats back to his comfort zone in the face of Anna's intransigence. This chapter just makes me so very, very sad. Techrific said, a short chapter where husband and wife are in limbo, the uneasy space where nothing has been resolved. To the first question, I feel bad for them. Tolstoy empathizes for both of them, sorry. Alexei's predicament, and I feel... Oh my god, wait, let me start this sentence again. Tolstoy emphasized Alexei's predicament, and I liked the description of Alexei, like a bull submissively bowing its head, he awaited the axe. But we mustn't forget the times this takes place in. Anna stands to lose more than Alexei, in a sense. Her status potentially, her child and her wealth, could be lost if Alexei so chooses. In short, it's tragedy all around, and there are no clear winners. Anna might not see it that way, of course, but I suspect she's not really thought this through. That's why we're now observing this tense limbic state of their relationship. Nifty Riffic said, I really digged this chapter. Short and weighty. All right, that's the discussion part of the podcast done. We have discussed a very short chapter, but some really good conversation came out of it. So that's cool. Now, again, we've got a very special treat. Nifty Riffic is going to read chapter 11 for us. So please enjoy this reading by Nifty Riffic, and I will see you tomorrow.
Hey everybody, this is Nifty Riffic, and I'm going to read Chapter 11. Chapter 11, Part 2 of Anna Karenina. That, which for nearly a year had been Vronsky's sole and exclusive desire, supplanting all his former desires, that which for Anna had been an impossible, dreadful, but all the more bewitching dream of happiness, had come to pass. Pale, with trembling lower jaw, he stood over her, entreating her to be calm, himself not knowing why or how. Anna, he said in a trembling voice, Anna, for God's sake. But the louder he spoke, the lower she drooped her once proud, bright, but now dishonored head, and she writhed, slipping down from the sofa on which she sat to the floor at his feet. She would have fallen on the carpet if he had not held her. My God, forgive me, she said, sobbing and pressing Vronsky's hand to her breast. She felt so guilty, so much to blame, that it only remained for her to humble herself and ask to be forgiven. But she had no one in the world now except him, so that even her prayer for forgiveness was addressed to him. Looking at him, she felt her degradation physically and could say nothing more. He felt what a murderer must feel when looking at the body he has deprived of life. The body he had deprived of life was their love, the first period of their love. There was something frightful and revolting in the recollection of what had been paid for with this terrible price of shame. The shame she felt at her spiritual nakedness communicated itself to him, but in spite of the murderer's horror of the body of his victim, that body must be cut in pieces and hidden away, and he must make use of what he has obtained by the murder. Then, as the murderer desperately throws himself on the body as though with passion and drags it and hacks it, so Vronsky covered her face and shoulders with kisses. She held his hand and did not move. Yes, these kisses were what had been bought by their shame. Yes, and this hand, which will always be mine, is the hand of my accomplice. She lifted his hand and kissed it. He knelt down and tried to see her face, but she hid it and did not speak. At last, as though mastering herself, she sat up and pushed him away. Her face was as beautiful as ever, but all the more piteous. It's all over, she said. I have nothing but you left. Remember that. I cannot help remembering what is life itself to me for one moment of that bliss. What bliss? She said with disgust and horror, and the horror was involuntarily communicated to him. For heaven's sake, not another word. She rose quickly and moved away from him. Not another word, she repeated, and with a look of cold despair strange to him, she left him. She felt that at that moment she could not express in words her feeling of shame, joy, and horror at this entrance on a new life, and she did not wish to vulgarize that feeling by inadequate words. Later on, the next day, and the next, she still could not find words to describe all the complexity of those feelings, and could not even find thoughts with which to reflect on all that was in her soul. She said to herself, No, I can't think about it now, later when I am calmer, but that calm necessary for reflection never came. Every time she thought of what she had done, and what was to become of her, and of what she should do, came to her mind, she was seized with horror and drove these thoughts away. Not now, later, when I am calmer, she said to herself. But in her dreams, when she had no control over her thoughts, her position appeared to her in all its shocking nakedness. One dream she had almost every night. She dreamt that both at once were her husbands, and lavished their caresses on her. Alexis Alexandrovitch wept, kissing her hand, saying, How beautiful it is now, and Alexis Vronsky was there too, and he also was her husband. And she was surprised that formerly this had seemed impossible to her, and laughingly explained to them how much simpler it really was and that they were both now contented and happy. But this dream weighed on her like a nightmare, and she woke from it filled with horror.